Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
Welcome along to a Need to Know podcast. We're up to episode 175, and again, I'm joined by my returning new coast hosts. Not my coast. Oh, dear. Bad start already. Brenton Johnson, welcome.
Thanks, Robert. Happy to be here again.
So you can see that we do everything on the fly. Nothing's planned. It's all ad hoc, so things haven't changed in 175 episodes, and we still haven't got it right. So we'll get there, and we'll keep working at it. So again, Brenton joins us again, and he'll be pleased to know there weren't too many complaints from the last episode. We did have some issues with the sound quality, but we did check that before. The volume, I suppose, was more the issue. We did check that, and we verified that. So fingers crossed that everybody can hear both sides of the conversation in this case. Secondly, I hope Brenton's got over any butterflies or jitters he's had. What about how are you, Brenton? Is it all, you've had your shot of whiskey and vodka, have you?
Yeah, I'm feeling all right now. After asking everybody how it went, they go, "Oh, you're really quiet." I'm like, "The content." "Oh, right, yeah." And it's like, "Oh, people are so easily distracted, aren't they?"
That's right. That's why you got to, I told you got to pump up the volume. You got to speak really loudly, like me. The more you yell, the more people think your content's good. So,
Excellent. That's
the way to approach it. So, what have you been busy doing in the past little while since we've had our last episode?
Well, it's been 2 weeks now, so I've just been flat out talking security. It's all security, because it's all about notifiable data breach, regulations coming in, business continuity, having that conversation, so which is really what I'm passionate about. So I've been pretty happy,
Yeah, thank God that there are still hackers out there that are keeping everybody in the security space still employed. So if you think back to the times when the industry started, we've always been trying to combat security or improve security, and we've never really got it right. I don't think we ever will. Personally, I think it's going to be the end of civilization as we depend more on technology. But that said, products like Office 365, Azure and whatnot are improving and providing additional functionality, and we are going to speak more in depth around some of the legislation in Australia and hopefully a bit worldwide, and look at some of the solutions that particularly Office 365 and Azure does provide for people. We'll deep dive into that. But before we do that, let's go into some news just to get people up to date on the Microsoft Cloud. So I think the biggest announcement that I've seen since we've last been together is the fact now that Microsoft Teams supports non-Azure AD accounts. So basically, you can now use a free Microsoft account to connect external users into Teams. So they're very much like connecting to your OneDrive, also connecting to SharePoint Team Site. So now Teams supports the ability to create a free Microsoft account and allow users into the best of the action in Teams, including chat, the files, and a lot of other stuff you've set up in that. So I use that in my CIA Ops patron environment. So again, that's worked very well. Good way to share information, keep people up to date, as well as give them access to SharePoint. So that's been a big one that a lot of people have been waiting on. So I think that'll be a very, very high usage item for a lot of people now. Do you have any people using external users in Teams yet, Brenton?
Oh, no, it's way too early for that for me. But I think it's a good step in the right direction because, you know, as the world becomes, you know, I've got customers in Google, and Google's kind of released a product in the last few weeks that do it, but, you know, Teams is an excellent product, so I'd stand behind it any day of the week. And if they can jump in there and just start using it and eventually migrate over to Office 365 to make my life easier, I'm all for it.
Excellent. Well, it sounds to me as though you need to get in there and push them a bit because Teams is a great product, and gives you a lot of advantages once you get into the Microsoft sphere. The important thing with Teams is it's available in all suites of Office 365. So if you haven't had a look, go do that. And now you have basically external access where you can invite any user. Now, something else that Microsoft's been working hard on is some improvements around its security. So it's now added some options in the ATP product, the Advanced Threat Protection, to allow you to identify users within your organization who may be more subject to, identity attacks. So basically, someone pretending to be accounts and sending something to the CEO asking them for a payment to be made via Western Union to some dodgy brothers establishment, maybe in an overseas country. So what it allows you to do is go and set in a policy and, again, apply some more intelligence around specific users and how they interact with emails and requests. So, again, nice little handy option that's been rolled in to the more advanced products with Microsoft. Speaking of improved security, we've also got a new version or an updated version of Azure AD Connect. We'll make sure that the link to the release notes is in the post for this blog. So again, make sure that you're firstly not using DirSync. DirSync has been deprecated, so has the Azure AD Sync product, and we should all now be using Azure AD Connect and obviously using the latest version that includes not only some security fixes, bug fixes, as well as some updates as well. So again, that product keeps marching forward. And again, I certainly prefer the Azure AD product to using the Windows Server Essentials product. Again, I think that's a bit limiting. Do you have any people using the Essentials product, Brenton?
Not at the moment, no.
Yeah, I think that, again, my advice to people generally would be to be careful using it. I think it does have a feature set that may make management easier, but in the long run, I think it's better to go with standard products like Azure AD Connect. Now, speaking of Azure, we always got to have a bit of Azure news here. The Azure Migrate service now has gone general availability, so this is an easy way, an easy set of tools for you to specifically look at typically moving your IaaS environment, your infrastructure environment into Azure. It makes it easier to move virtual machines and whatnot into the Azure product. Again, that's what we're seeing more and more people wanting to do. Again, it may not be a case where you move everything to the cloud, but again, things like hybrid environment is going to still need some Azure migration. So Microsoft has moved that Azure Migrate product into general availability. We're also being introduced to the new Azure Advanced Protection product. That basically, again, gives a more overarching security and deeper look into Azure services and monitoring. Azure's got a pretty good monitoring or security center. So if you haven't had a look at that, the good thing about the Azure Security Center is that it rolls up basically all the security warnings and assessments into a single portal that you can then drill into and take actions on. So one of the big advantages of moving a lot of the infrastructure and things into a single portal like Azure is, again, you basically get a dashboard over the top of all this to make it much easier for you to keep on top and manage the environment. Certainly something that's always been a challenge on-prem. Now, before we get into our security discussion, I'll mention that I wrote a blog post recently that basically showed you how to go and check your tenant for email forward. So one of the most common techniques that hackers use is they will compromise somebody's password by tricking them to giving it in via some sort of malicious website. They will then log in as that user and set up an email forward. So what that'll do is it will copy email from that user to their inbox, but also to the hacker's Gmail or something like a Yahoo address that the hacker can then monitor, and then that gives them more intelligence and allows them to begin to launch attacks. Now, again, that forwarding is quite easy to set up, but a lot of people don't take the time to do a check on it, and they should do this regularly. So again, I'll put the link in the show notes that will show you how to run a simple PowerShell script to have a look and determine if any of the email addresses or any of the inboxes have forwardings on them, so you can identify whether there's something untoward in there. So again, a good way to do this is to run it regularly, and there are some other tools like Azure Functions that you can schedule this and continue to run this regularly. But I think the tip from me for this month around security would be is make sure that you go in and check those email forwards and make sure the bad guys haven't got into your environment and are sending information outside your tenant.
And just on that, Robert, if you don't mind me tuning in, I had a customer that got attacked like that. They rang me up and said, I haven't been getting emails. It was over a long weekend. I said, it's Office 365. You will always get emails. They said, no, I haven't. So I logged in and had a bit of a look around. I couldn't figure it out. And then I checked the forwarding. And what was happening is they've started forwarding, but they clicked the tick box that says, don't keep a copy in the inbox. Now, if they hadn't ticked that, that could have gone on for months and months and months without me knowing. It was a pretty blunt attack. They sent out a whole bunch of remittance advices or whatever, as they typically do, and then wanted all the replies that came back from them to go directly to them. So I think that's what you're talking about is incredibly important. So I just went through and blocked with a hammer, basically blocked anyone from doing that in any of my tenants ever again. But there is cases where people need that functionality. So, you probably haven't gone through and blocked any of these functions from happening. So it's really important that you do take those auditing steps when you're working with, sensitive information, sensitive clients.
I think it's also great to see that there are incompetent hackers as well as incompetent IT people and incompetent customers. So it's great to see that that demographic does exist out there. But you're right, if they had done the right thing and run it, in the right way, again, you don't see that forwarding, you don't know it's happening. They get a nice feed of the emails and they can then use that to determine, who's in the business. Now, if they're lucky enough to capture the accounts person, then that's a real gold mine for them. They can then start looking at launching attacks. So again, Microsoft, the way it configures Office 365 is generally for enablement, which means a lot of, I suppose, the tighter security requirements or options are not turned on or not enabled. And I think this is part of the standard process you need to approach when you roll out a tenant, is to make sure that you do lock things down. So again, look at the forwards, disable accounts that aren't being used, look at multi-factor authentication, lots of ways to do this. And again, the most important thing is that a lot of this compliance and requirements are now being forced upon organizations due to the legislation that we're seeing come from our local environment, Australia, and obviously overseas as well. So I think with that, that's probably a very good lead into what our major topic is going to be. So why don't I let you, Brenton, just set the scene for us and let's talk about some of the things in this environment we face today.
Yeah, so the big thing that I wanted to talk about, this is a flavour of the month at the moment, because come this 22nd of February that's just gone, so it's already in effect, there was changes to the Privacy Act. That basically said, if you've been hacked and you know about it, and that there's a serious, you think the data could cause serious harm, then you need to report it both to the government and to the affected customers, which is, this isn't something that we've had in Australia before. It's, it's built into a lot of European, legislation, but it's quite a new act or new concept, and it's not something that people have really had to look at before. They've been able to make the decision, okay, well, you lost all our customers' credit card numbers. Do we keep it as not credit card because that's PCI compliance, but say we lost all their birthdays. They could be identity theft victims, but we don't feel like telling them unless the Privacy Act actually explicitly tells them to do it. Now that it does, that's what's changed about this. So it's all it is. It's an amendment to the Privacy Act. So any company that currently is under the Privacy Act, which is a lot more companies than you think, it'd be any healthcare provider, any TFN recipients, so accountants that get TFNs in, financial planners. I don't care if they have one customer and turn over $50 a year. They still, if they're a TFN recipient, they have to be. Gyms are an interesting one. Gyms are another one that's affected because they're a healthcare provider and they're storing very personally identifiable information. So there's a lot of people who are under the Privacy Act who may be not aware of it, which these changes are significantly going to affect. The reason it's coming to effect is because we've had these big data breaches. Like, you know, take Uber. Uber was a classic. There was about 2.5 million Australians, 2.8 million Australians, something like that, that had all their, you know, information leaked on the internet, or hacked rather. And the hacker, they paid the hacker to stay quiet, basically. So rather than doing the right thing, disclosing the data breach, etc., etc., they tried to cover it up. And, you know, there's a growing sentiment around the world that that sort of behaviour is not acceptable. So now we're seeing legislation coming in to keep some of these companies to account, and to make sure that they are doing the right thing in light of a data breach. So do you reckon I got everything there, Robert? Was there any questions?
Well, I think probably the thing to firstly highlight is that we're talking about the Australian Privacy Act. Again, if you are outside Australia, I feel sorry for you, but there probably is legislation that would apply in your region. So again, part of it, I think, is firstly to educate yourself and make sure that you're across the legislation that is applicable in your locality. The second thing is that there are some exemptions here. So I think if I'm correct, that normally with the Privacy Act, there is a requirement for it to be a $3 million business or above, I think, in revenue. However, if you basically look after the Medicare number, which is a healthcare number, or the tax file number, again, then you are required to do this no matter what your revenue size. So I think that's important. And the way I would treat it, which I think is what you would probably recommend as well, is that every business should take this on board anyway, because I think it's good criteria and it's good practice, and then you'll know that you're complying with it anyway. So rather than looking for exemptions, I'd be looking to make sure that you are included in that. I mean, is that a fair comment?
Yeah, look, I definitely agree with that. You know, there's a general trend in the world at the moment, and it's being led largely by Europe. So if you have a look at what Europe's doing with GDPR, it's definitely a conversation that's going to become more and more and more applicable. And I'm just thinking of, like, you know, sort of getting into the analysis bit here, but Troy Hunt, who's a Microsoft MVP, talks about this Minecraft website. And, you know, you think a Minecraft website that sets up gaming servers for people, you know, what sort of information would they have on their customers? And all they had was username and passwords, basically. They got hacked, 7 million people, 7 million records, all gone. And, you know, they go, okay, well, that's not a serious attack. But then people were coming back and saying, oh, I use that for my banking password, I use that for my social media, I use that for my email. So all of a sudden, we're saying, okay, even something as innocuous or whimsical as something like, you know, a gaming server on the internet, has a serious harm implication in real life. The way it applies to this particular act, though, is an interesting one, because the business gets to decide whether it's potentially seriously harmful, not necessarily the consumer. So they might say, okay, well, I don't find that to be serious harm. And then they could stand up in a court of law and say, yeah, you know, we assessed the situation and decided that there was no serious harm there. Which, you know, I think all of that is all going to be tightened up as the world gets more and more digital. Because, you know, as I said, if you have a customer and one of your customers, you know, loses their house, or, you know, racks up $100,000 of debt because someone ran around with their identity and set up all these loans and, you know, bought gold and left the country, you know, that's on you. So, you know, yes, it's good to be thinking about, okay, well, it's good to be secure and et cetera, but I don't think it's good enough just to sit back and go, you know, who cares? And I think that's where we're both getting to there.
Well, I think the reality here is that security is becoming, you know, more and more important as more and more of our records and information is placed, is digital. Again, for a lot of people, that's hard to sort of comprehend. Is it protected? How is it protected? And to run, you know, regular checks on that. And I think also, too, there's been a bit of a environment where people have sort of been very casual about digital data. So Since the introduction of the data breach legislation, which was, I think, the 25th of February, only a month or so ago, less than a month, I've received numerous emails mistakenly forwarded to me with what could be considered data breach information. So again, if you type in someone's email address incorrectly and you send an attachment or potentially someone's personal data in there, then in technicalities, that's probably a breach of data. So it's very, very difficult, I think, to change the way that people are used to acting. And I think that's where the security requirements are not just pure technical. You have to look at it as a person and a policy, a training sort of thing as well. It really means a culture of people thinking about security first. And that has been something that people like Microsoft and other people have been trying to drill into developers and people that write software for many, many years. And I think that, unfortunately, we're always going to see a challenge when it comes to this, because it's so easy to overlook or leave one door open. So as I tell people, I think that when you look at the odds, so if you need to protect against a threat, the challenge is you have to protect against all of them. You cannot leave anything unturned, because all it takes for a bad guy is to find one vulnerability, and then they can scale up from that. So again, the odds are stacked against you, and you really have to change the way that you approach the security. And I think the legislation, again, is probably the only way that's going to enforce that. And again, it really requires a lot of people, I think, to take a step back and really take security seriously and put it up there in terms of, you know, the way they look at IT. Unfortunately, security's always been seen as a cost. You know, why do I have to do that? Why do I have to have long passwords? Why? Well, I think now that the reality is it's simply a matter of having to have that. Which is very interesting. So
you make a good point there, Robert. I just want to pick you up on one of the things that you said. So people think of security as being an unpatched server, a $10 firewall from Harvey Norman, et cetera, but that's a small part of it. It's an important part of it, but it's a small part of it. It can be as much as a filing cabinet. Someone breaking in, opening up a filing cabinet, picking up physical pieces of paper and leaving the office. That's now a notifiable data breach. So it's not always just digital. It's very easy to fall into a pattern of thinking, well, I've got Office 365, I've put in the security, I've done that. But you've still got, say, 100, 200, 1,000 users out there all doing stupid things every day that you have to basically try and mitigate, control. You know, you can do it with policy, but you also need to be doing the training bit, as which you picked up before. You know, it's just not good enough to sit back and go, it's technically secure.
Well, I think, again, nothing's ever technically secure, as we know, and I think that times change. And again, some of the technologies, like, you know, encryption algorithms, again, are subject to age, and again, this older algorithms aren't that's now breakable, where they wasn't before. We could throw enough computing power at it. But you're right. I think that we need to look at people. We need to look at training them and helping them understand how important the security is. And I think that good examples we see are identity theft. It's so easy to start, you know, working somebody's identity, take you know, their email address and build it up from there. It always surprises me at how easily people are able to be manipulated to make transfer of funds. Again, it's a get an emotional response, and oh, it's got to happen. If it pretends to come from the CEO, then it happens very quickly. So,
and that's now, a classic policy one as well, where, you know, CFO says transfer $500,000 in an email, I need it done right now. No one picks up the phone and asks the CFO why are they sending that in an email. That $500,000 could have been saved with a simple phone call. So, yeah, it's not just technology. It's about picking up some of those other bits too.
All right, so let's talk about some of the other things I think that's going to have a significant impact, at least to here in Australia. This one from outside our region here. So the GDPR, which is the European Union's new privacy and security requirement. Have you got any information that you can share on that?
I certainly can. So it's called the General Data Protection Regulation. It's a very sexy name. They've probably spent all night thinking about it and coming up with it. So Yeah, look, it's so it has notifiable data breach in baked into it. So in Australia, you've got 30 days. Okay, I found out such and such has hacked me. I've got customer records. That's 30 days to tell the government and customers. In GDPR, we're talking 72 hours, which, you know, I think is reasonable. But when you're talking about a company with, you know, hundreds of millions of records, you know, it's someone like a Telstra. How does Telstra notify? Well, Telstra's probably lucky because they're a communications company, but take an Origin or someone like that. How do they notify that many customers that quickly? But that's what GDPR is saying. There's a couple other things in there, like the right to be forgotten, which is producing some really big technical challenges out there because, you know, we think of things like backup. You're backing up your customer's information, you're backing up email. Someone puts a request in and says, I want to be forgotten. So you've got to go and remove them, any trace of their personally identifiable information from all your systems. But you might have 20 disparate systems, you've got legacy systems, you've got all sorts of systems that their information is in. And now you've got to somehow forget them. Companies like Google are really struggling with this because you can put in a request to Google and say, delist my name from Google. Say, delist Brenton Johnson from Google, but don't delist all the other Brenton Johnson from Google. And they're having that challenge. The most relevant part of that whole GDPR conversation for Australians and for other people in areas of the world is if you have a single customer in Europe, you have to comply with GDPR. If you don't comply with GDPR, you are liable for up to 4% of your revenue, global revenue. So, you know, in the case of the Uber breach, it'd be $1.8 million for Australians, you know, 2.8 million Australian records. In the UK, we're talking same amount of records, 2.8 million. $330 million of liability. So it's massive. And then at the minimum, the absolute minimum, it's 20 million euros. So it's just a massive amount of money. So you need to be going, okay, we're in Europe. We need to be thinking about GDPR. And even if you've only got a few customers over there, you're still exposed. So you need to be across it. And the more customers you have, the more across it I would recommend you be. Particularly, I see a drift of that sort of influence from Europe starting to influence the rest of the world. So if you can be compliant with GDPR, you're pretty much compliant everywhere else.
All right, so here's an interesting question in light of the fact that we in Australia have the GDPR outside our national boundaries. I mean, someone could say, for example, well, you know, basically that's a European thing and, you know, that doesn't apply to me because I'm an Australian and Australian business and European laws don't apply to me. I mean, what's the sort of, you know, what's the answer to that or how do we deal with those sort of things?
My answer to that is the European Union don't care and they will pursue you. So I'm not a lawyer. I can't give you legal advice. So don't take what I say as legal advice, but the way that the GDPR is worded is it's all around, we don't care where you are, what sort of company you are. If you're a Panama based company and you know all your IP's in Panama and you know there's a shell company, you'll just bankrupt if we ever sue you. That's not how it works. No matter where you are, where your operations are, if you have a customer in Europe and you don't follow the GDPR, then that's it. We're coming after you. So yeah, it's not going to be good enough to sit back and go, it's not my problem, because they will find you. They'll figure it out.
Well, there's a lot of money at stake here. And again, they want to make sure to set an example as well. Exactly. So that they're not going to allow people to step outside that. So it's going to be very interesting that what actually happens, especially on a larger scale. But again, what we're saying here is that it is a requirement. It is something that people, even down to the SMBs, are going to need to at least understand, have a look at, and make sure they've made some sort of effort to be compliant. I think the biggest challenge, as you mentioned, is the right to be forgotten. Again, how is that going to happen when you've got backups of somebody's data for 5 years that they've been, and all of a sudden they come to you and say they want that all removed from every backup that you've ever done? So again, some thinking will need to be done there and look at how that's done. I think that I suppose the positive light on it is that the products from Microsoft, for example, like Office 365 and Azure, those companies are working very hard to make sure their products are GDP compliant. So if you are using products like Office 365, again, you have that sort of compliance built into it. Again, you may have to turn things on. You may have to do things a certain way to make sure you're 100% compliant. But those IT systems are certainly, you know, going to be able to be compliant given their global scale. That would certainly be a challenge if you're trying to do it on-prem.
Oh, yeah.
So again, I think that's one of the benefits we've got here. But I think the message is, and this is what I'm trying to get across to a lot of people, is that the most common licenses I see sold for Office 365 are business licenses. Now, those business licenses don't include the enterprise security features. So they don't include things like data loss prevention, DLP. They don't include legal hold. They have limited retention periods and so on. So I think in light of this new compliance, I would suggest that, you know, people who are using and selling Office 365 really need to look at the enhanced security features of the E3 and E5 plan. Yes, they are more expensive, but you get what you pay for when it comes to security. And again, some of these more advanced threat protection options in things like Office 365 are typically available in the E5 plan. So again, if you want to be able to sleep at night, if you want to be able to reduce a lot of this overhead, this worry, this requirement to be compliant, again, the higher end products from Office 365 are a better bet. You can easily configure them with PowerShell to make sure you're consistent across your environment. But again, I think in many cases, people just aren't aware or don't appreciate or perhaps head in the sand approach to compliance. But we see a lot of that in security as well. So example I've had is, you know, people say, oh, you know, how do I get infected with CryptoLocker? I'm using, you know, the latest, I'm using this technology. And you say, well, you know, what are you running on your desktop? Oh, I'm running Outlook 2003 mm-hmm. and Windows 7. And it's like, well, this is why the end-to-end approach is something that you really need to address.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, it's not overly complicated. I run DLP in my organization. It's very simple to set up. There's templates in there for the Australians, so it'll say, you know, Australian license number. And it's incredibly clever, too. Because I have vendors, I've got to send my personal information to vendors, which I'm not incredibly happy about. But if they want to pursue me, I guess that's how it is, if I want to work with them. So I send them off my driver's license, and it says, no sending of driver's licenses. You're in breach of your own policies. I'm like, oh, okay, well, maybe I can get around this. So I put in a zip file, and I sent the zip file, and I'm thinking, it's pretty clever that it can pick up in the image. Like, it didn't have any text of the actual driver's license number. It's picked up the image, obviously done some sort of OCR over the top of it, picked up that number and says driver's license number. Put in a zip, it unzipped the zip, did the same thing, blocked it. So I had to actually send an encrypted file off in an encrypted zip file so it couldn't open it. But I'm thinking, you know, that was a lot of effort. All the time it's picking up, that's putting it in the log. You know, IT admins are able to audit that and get notifications of that, I imagine, Robert?
Yeah, look, I think that, again, the DLPs are fairly, you know, requires a bit of understanding and knowledge, but it, like you said, it is very, very clever, and it does have a number of different components. So again, you can put in place for the policy, it will look for certain numbers or certain items, driver's license, tax file number, social security number, and so forth, and then you can set the policy to either warn people or take action or whatever you want to do. But it can also be really, really clever in that you can upload a document template. So imagine you're a medical practice and you have a number of patient records. If they are in sort of a standard format, or use a standard document, you can upload a template of that and then apply that through the DLP policy, where it will then start looking at documents which match that format, and again start blocking them because you've set those to not be sent outside the organization. So again, these sort of advanced features like DLP, e-discovery, all that sort of stuff is typically E3 and above, and certainly given this environment would certainly strongly encourage people to do that. The other thing that Microsoft has released, I suppose in the most recent area, is the Microsoft 365 product. So there is a business and an enterprise product. This is a combination of Office 365, Windows 10, and the EMS suite, the Enterprise Mobility and Security suite. And again, that's going to give you that end-to-end protection with effectively a single login, Azure AD login, to rule them all. So I think that the products are out there. I've seen them put in. I haven't seen a lot of them configured correctly or appropriately. And I think that's what needs to change. And it's so easy to do once you work out how to do it with something like PowerShell. You just script it all the way through. But yes, DLP and these sort of advanced security features are extremely powerful. And another really good example with E3 licensing is what they call Azure Information Protection. Rights management allows you to put the permissions inside the documents, and no matter where the document goes on the internet, you can control what people can do with it. So the options are there. They might cost you a little bit more, but I think they'll allow you to sleep at night.
Oh, yeah, and that Azure Rights Management, or whatever it's called these days, is unbelievable as well, because it's locally encrypted. It goes out to the internet, gets credentials, rips it down, and then you can have an option to say, don't let anyone open it unless they're connected to the internet, or let people open it if they're not connected to the internet. So if you have internet only option, as soon as someone leaves the organization, you turn off their Office 365 account, any document they've stolen, customer file, etc., all of a sudden they can't open any of that. Doesn't matter if they put on a USB stick 6 months ago, they still don't have access. And that's something you can't do with passwords. With a password, you can't change it in the future. If they've got it on the memory stick, they've taken it home, they know the password, that's it. You can never control that document. But with some of these other platforms, it blows my mind. Honestly, I feel like it's Star Trek here.
Yeah, and I think the thing is that this is, again, another good reason to make sure you keep up to date with all the things that Microsoft's putting out, which hopefully we're giving people information on here. But Microsoft is very committed to making sure it's a secure environment. That's one of its, I suppose, differentiation points. Microsoft is one of the biggest security companies in the world, but a lot of people don't realize the amount of investment they make in security and trying to manage the things through the Digital Crimes Unit and so on. So again, but the big limitation is the fact that you need to turn this stuff on. You really do. You need to work out what works for your organization, how you want to lock it down, to what level. So an example is the SPF record for email transactions are basically in servers. Most people have that set to obviously mark but take no action. So again, simple things like, okay, when a spam or a spoofed email comes in, the SPF record looks at it and says, yeah, this looks dodgy, but then it doesn't take an action. So again, cranking that up one level so it actually goes and rejects it or quarantines it or goes to the next level, I think is something important, something you need to look at. Now, again, Office 365, Azure, those things do have those security features, but again, like I said, they need to be turned on. And the recommendation, the best way to turn it on is, again, work out the script requirements or the commands to do it in a script, and then you just script every single thing in the same way, then you know you get a consistent environment. So I think the message, the big takeaway is obviously two things. Is firstly that make sure you're aware of your compliance no matter what region you're in. In Australia, we typically have the data breach legislation, also the Privacy Act to worry about, and potentially the GDPR outside our region. And the second thing is make sure that you are configuring your tenants correctly and appropriately. And I would suggest that more security is always better than less security when it comes to the environment we face today.
In some sense, just with a caveat, sometimes more security can mean less security if it can significantly inconveniences your users. If you had really complicated passwords, they'll put it on sticky notes and stick it on the monitor, for example. So getting the balances right, but the stuff that we're talking about today is background stuff that you can put in that's not going to make a big impact on your users, but it's going to significantly increase your security. So things like SPF records, marketer might jump on MailChimp and go, why isn't it working? You can fix that, but it doesn't impact every user in the organization all that much or make their life that much more inconvenient. You know, things like DMARC and DKIM as well for mail reporting, very, very important, but never, hardly ever seen in the wild. So these are things that you can go to your customer with, bill them for, show them how it all works, and explain that, you know, it's great because your users aren't inconvenienced by it. And this is the holy grail of security. If we can get it to the point where it's not confusing for the customer, it doesn't harm the customer experience, but it makes them more secure, that's the holy grail, in my opinion.
Well, again, the best way I look at describing security to non-IT people is it's a triangle. Basically, it's a balance between security, usability, and cheap or cost. And basically, you need to pick two sides of those triangles. So again, if you want it cheap and usable, it's not going to be secure. If you want it secure and cheap, then again, you know, the other side does apply. So again, look at it in that respect. It's a journey, and it's also a fact that you're not going to be able to get everything. And in essence, you get what you pay for. And there is going to need to be a decision as to what level of security that you put in. You need to maintain the productivity, but there's a lot of simple things that can be done to make life much more secure without inconvenience users greatly. But again, part of that, as we talked about, is the training users to help them understand that security is very, very important, because they don't want their information sent outside the organization, and likely they should treat other people's records in the same manner. They don't want to give those away to people who could then abuse them. So again, lots of options. We'll put the notes all in the post for this site, but is there anything else you want to call people's attention to before we round off, Brenton?
Not really. I just want to maybe get into final thoughts and really just encourage everybody to go out and have that customer conversation around security this month. So if you haven't done it already, there's never been a better time to go around and talk about security, because GDPR is coming in a few months now. I think it's, 80 days away, something like that. You've just had
May, I think it is.
You've had notifiable data breach, which I've been talking to a lot of organisations, and they're getting non-IT people to solve these problems, which sounds hilarious to an IT person, but the way it works, you know, there's not a lot of technical thing to it if you're just reading the legislation, but I tell you what, IT people can add a lot of value. So my thing would be going around having those C-level conversations, talk to the C-suite, the CIO, the CEO, etc. Talk about the cost of a data breach. The average cost of a data breach in Australia is $138 per record. Figure out how many records they are, write a number on a napkin for them, catch them as they pass out on the floor so they don't hit their head, and then sell them some form of better security solution than what they have now. Because I can tell you what, almost every company can do better, but the focus is always on other things. So if you can bring it back to security, it's good for you, it's good for the customer, it's good for their customers, it's good for everybody.
Yeah, and I think the secret to it is a lot of people try and sell security by fear. And again, if you're constantly crying wolf and they see nothing, well then, that's certainly going to wear out very quickly. I think, like you said, you need to translate it to a real cost. People have insurance for their car, they have insurance for their business, they have those sort of things in place. You basically have to say, look, if this happens, this is the financial impact to the business, and that will, again, potentially cause you harm, cause the business harm to whatever extent. So again, we back up our IT systems for a reason, and again, we need some ability to mitigate our risk, and that's what we need to do. The first is obviously to put in training, policies, procedures, but then also make sure that we've got the technical stuff down pat, and that we are doing as much as we can to make sure that we have things controlled. A lot of that means using the latest features, the latest availability of software and services. Now, Office 365 and Azure gives us that automatically, but so many people are out there, oh, Windows 7 is good enough, or Office 2003 or 2007 is good enough. You know, I don't want to pay for anything else. Well, that certainly comes a cropper very quickly when you do get a breach or you do get an infection caused by CryptoLocker, because those applications, you know, don't support the newer security features. So again, there will be pain, there will be a bit of cost, but I think that in this day and age, there's going to need to be a bit more of an investment in time and money to make sure that the organization remains secure and compliant, given all the requirements that are coming at us left, right, and center from our region and outside our region. So plenty of challenges there, plenty of opportunities for everybody to go away, I think, and have a look at their own environment just to make sure that they are doing the best that they can. All right, well, with that, why don't you let people know, Brenton, how they can get in touch with you if they've got any further questions or want more information about what you've been talking about here.
Yep, so best way to get me is just brentonjohnson.com. You put me into Google, I'll be first result, or Bing in this case. I check that I come up in Bing, and I do, in fact, come up as first result in Bing, Robert. So you'd be glad to hear that.
Good. I'm not the only one that'll be glad to hear that, but yes, go on.
So, that's probably the easiest way to get me. It's got my Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. on there. I'm pretty available on all of those platforms, Facebook. So flick me a message if you have any questions. Love to hear from you.
Cool. All right. Well, you can access me typically via the Twitter at DirectorCIA. Again, my Patreon community is a place that you can subscribe to on a regular basis and get updates on all things happening Microsoft Cloud, ask questions, join the community, and you'll find that at www.ciaopspatron.com. You can send us feedback and questions and things you'd like us to cover here on the podcast at feedback@needtoknow.cloud. And of course, if you want to catch up on past episodes, you'll find those at podcast.needtoknow.cloud. All the information will be put up on a blog post on my blog. So again, make sure that you follow that for all the information on the podcast, Office 365 and Azure. And you'll find that at blog.ciaops.com. And I think with that, if we've got nothing else, Brenton, I think that we can call an end to this episode.
Love it. Thanks for that, Robert.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll catch you on the next episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.